The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Man in Line's on today with DEFA, the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture, existing to protect and enhance the natural assets that we have on the Isle of Man. But there have been issues, there have been problems. Obviously, sometimes there's a tension between environmental protection and sustainable, productive and profitable agriculture. We have to maintain the plantations. We talked about the health of the trees last time we were in. And at the back of it all, we have climate goals, and of course there are economic realities. And Claire Barber, MHK, is with us, and Tim Castle, Chief Officer. Fastamai, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, Fastamai, Andy.
Okay, so last time we talked quite a bit about the trees, ash dieback and Dutch elm, and what's to be done with it. I drove down Thalty Will the other day. It looks a bit like a tree skeleton place. I mean, there are lots of, it may be just the image, but there are lots of, are there many dead trees on the Isle of Man, Claire?
So the work in the plantations is slightly different, although there was unquestionably challenges with tree disease spattered in amongst that. But obviously the plantations were planted as a crop. So having done work post the storms, looked at the forestry management and across the island, what was realised, if we didn't start to actually crop some of these trees soon, we would see the value start to depreciate. So we were very keen to put a proper plan in place. That obviously has led to quite a stark change on the landscape, it's fair to say. And then alongside that, we know that there has been work around tree disease too. So I do acknowledge that that's significant. But what it's given is an opportunity, and we've been consulting on forestry management plans just very recently, actually, from the department. But it's given us an opportunity to look at how we replant and how we make sure that in future, when we have tree crops, we can do that in a way where we protect the perimeters. For example, we put in some different tree varieties that are more resilient for the island, and also make sure we're framing some of the footpaths and some of the walking routes that we know people rely on for dog walking, for just, you know, leisure and activities, but also for mountain biking trails and so on. We've got some great partners out in the community who've really worked hard to develop, but making sure that they're there and established so that when we do future cropping, future harvesting, we're in a position where it isn't quite so stark as it might look now.
It's worth restating, of course, the plantations, as you say, are there to crop. I mean, they're not there just for the good of their health and what have you. They are an asset to the department and the Isle of Man. Are these the trees that we see Meseron taking off the Isle of Man at Ramsey?
Yeah,
those big wagons loads.
Yeah, so we see them being taken off island, but I think it's also really important to say that that's the excess once we've taken what we need to service the sawmill on island.
Right.
So we've worked to develop a contract that makes sure that we're realising the best values for those trees, as they are a commodity crop, and that money then is reinvested through the department, some of it in terms of the replanting programme, but also in terms of some of the other works that we would be doing.
And who actually does the replanting? Is it direct labour?
So it's a mixture. Some of that's done internally, and some of it we work with contractors. So big piece of work, and obviously some of the equipment that you need to do replanting on the scale that we're talking about is significant. And I think it's important to say as well, when you look at the plantations across the island, there hasn't been any significant cropping for quite a long period of time, so really we're playing a bit of catch up, and there's been a huge amount of work from the team within DEFA, which I think is really important to give a bit of a shout out over, in terms of developing those forestry management plans, both so that we have that confidence for the public to understand what that will start to look like over the next 20, 30, 40 years, but also that will help us with getting an accreditation against our forestry supplies that will allow us to realise a better price. So this is a bit of a two-pronged piece of work.
Okay, and just a quick word on tree disease. Who's diagnosing that? Who's treating it? And is there a prognosis? Is there a plan, strategy for the future with those diseased trees?
So some of the work we're doing around replacing these trees is looking at building resilience by having a mixture of species of trees, and some of those that aren't susceptible to the diseases that we currently have available. Available is the wrong word, but that we have on Ireland. But I think what's really important to say is that that doesn't mean that there aren't diseases that will come in the future. And I think we'll always be playing a bit of a process of trying to keep a little bit ahead. At the minute, we're behind and there is a lot of work. And there's a mixture in terms of who's responsible, which was the point you made. Obviously, we have stuff within our own plantations and our glens that sits within DEFA. We know that DOI do work around the main roads and the arterial routes on the island. But there's also a role for landowners in that. And I know there's been a lot of conversation around how we balance that work, make sure that we're providing some degree of support, but in reality there has to be a responsibility that sits with landowners to make sure that their own trees are safe.
So all the trees that were taken down around Glen Helen over the past couple of months, was that you or was that DOI?
So there was the ones along the roadway.
Along TT course.
Yeah, so that was a joint piece of work. A lot of that work was done from DEFA, but we had to make sure we went back far enough that the trees that were left, if they fell outwards towards the course, wouldn't impede the roadway. So it's been quite a big piece of work. There's work still to do up at Glen Helen, it's fair to say. That is a particularly problematic part of our world.
It is a huge
DEFA.
Glen, isn't it?
It's a huge glen, and we know from the storms, we've seen trees that have fallen, they're partially down. We know that we do have tree disease. There's a significant piece of work still to do up there to make sure that our glens are safe and accessible for our members of the public, which we know both with the plantations, you know, although they are a crop, and the glens, making sure that people can use them is really important because it's part of what makes the Isle of Man the Isle of Man.
Okay, a message in from Marie just saying, could you explain, please, what is going on at the meat plant? Obviously, it was, well, she says it was run very successfully with the Farmers Co-op in 2008-2009, receiving a subsidy of $872,000. But now we see since government's taken over, the meat plant gets, well, how much does it get now?
So last year it was 4.585 million was the subvention. It's fair to say it rose even when the farmers were in charge, and part of that was because of changes around red meat derogation. I could probably do an hour or 2 hours programme just on the meat plant alone, and it really is a long story and a challenging story, I think it's fair to say. And I'm not going to pretend that we're where we need to be yet. What we had committed to do, we brought in an emergency board. They started a significant piece of work. We now have a board that's gone through the right recruitment processes, which we were really keen to make sure we had, and they're in place and they're picking that piece of work on in terms of delivering a sustainable 3-year plan. And it's, you know, it's reasonable to say there's already a lot of conversation from us as DEFA and the excuse me, and the board, making sure that the decision making is robust. We know that we could reduce what's affectionately known as the stagger, which is the waiting time between booking your animal in and it being processed. But there's a cost to that. So we have to try and look at where's the sort of main position that we can get to where it's not increasing that subvention to a rate that's completely unacceptable. Yeah. And I would say that the level we have now is not sustainable. It needs to come down. But where we can also make sure that the farmers are getting the service that they need. So it really is a fine balancing act. But we've got a good, strong team, I believe, in there. And we've had a catch-up meeting just this morning with some of that team. That's something we do on a very regular basis, just making sure that we're comfortable as to the progress they're making.
Can you, as Minister, and Tim as chief officer, can you see a way forward? Can you see the wood for the trees, pardon the mixed metaphor, can you see where the meat plant is going to become sustainable and prove an asset for food resilience on the Isle of Man, make money for the farmers and provide for the Isle of Man? Can you see what's going to happen?
So I think if you look at the things it's delivering, it is taking stock in, it is delivering meat into the local sector, and it is... Yeah, we are providing the subvention that it currently requires. I think for me, it's about finding where the realistic level for that subvention is. And I think in reality, it is higher than where it would previously have been. As I say, for a lot of reasons, not least, obviously, derogation changed. We have a situation where there is a competitive market for meat on the Isle of Man. But I think what's really important is the assurance that people can access that meat in different places. We've seen the partnership around Tesco looking to make sure that that meat is available for people to buy in the places they go to. I think it's absolutely essential that we're in a strong relationship with our local butchers, and we've seen a resurgence of butchers around the island, and I think that's a really positive news story where people can go and be confident that what they're buying is locally produced meat to a high standard. You know, we know that we have that assurance for meat on our island, and it's great if we can make sure people can access that at a price that works, and that can't be a price that's seeking to undercut. It can't be too low and it can't be too high. So I think everything's about finding a balance with this.
Okay, and Tim, anything to say on the meat plant?
It's been something, I've been in the role about 10 months, and the passion that people talk about Isle of Man meat is absolutely brilliant. And we've got a unique story. There's not many abattoirs that have such a farm to gate to abattoir position. It's about 12 miles maximum. So we've got the USP. I think there's something about on island sales and doing that and taking complexity out of the plant, as Minister said. The plant have got a great relationship with the butchers and with Tesco to take some of that challenge out of the system. But we want a 3-year plan, and that plan is to lower the subvention, but not at the cost to the level of service to the farming community and to the part. As we've, over the last couple of months, the position of animal health with diseases all around us at the moment, it shows the importance of having a meat plant for the island. If we didn't have the access to that market, it could be a massive detriment. We have a huge herd of around 100,000 animals to look after. So that all the positions are there. It's about just taking that complexity out. But we ran through the process of the new board members, and we've got some really unique experience. We've got on-island experience, and we've also got off-island experience. So we can get that balance between the two and make sure that we're kind of moving forward. So I think we're feeling confident in position, but it's incredibly difficult because the last thing we want to do is impact the farming community as a result of us trying to make cutbacks in that system when it's so important to us.
Okay, I'll add to that. Could you ask Claire Barber, says Andrea, what discussions she's had with the farming industry regarding the BSE issue and the 6-month delay between officers being notified and you being made aware, and what procedures have been put in place to ensure it doesn't happen again?
So, I mean, we've had a lot of conversation, as you'd expect, with the farming industry, and we're putting out monthly updates to producers. Obviously acknowledging the impact that's had. We also made a point of meeting with the UK Undersecretary of State for DEFRA, and what was really interesting, I think, in that conversation was almost a lack of awareness of just the size of the herd, as Tim's pointed out previously. You know, not just the size of herd on island, but the number of Manx-born cattle that there were in the UK. So when they've made that decision, they haven't only impacted our Manx farmers, our Manx producers, they have inadvertently impacted their own farmers and producers right. In the UK, and they had no awareness of that at all. So I think it's been quite a steep learning curve for the UK. I think it's been an opportunity for us to push to have more regular meetings with DEFRA, and they've certainly been welcoming that, but also for our chief vet to have more regular meetings. So as it stands at the minute, the chief vet goes to meetings. They're in conversation with them regularly, but the actual update meetings, they're only normally going to twice a year. So we've sought to have that increased off the back of this, because the problem is if you're not going to all the meetings and you're not seeing all the minutes of all the meetings, you don't know what you're missing. And that seems to be exactly what's happened here. They've proceeded with something, then by the time they've notified us that that was something they were doing, we're not in a position to be able to join that application. And as misfortune would stand, this particular process only gets reviewed, or there's only an opportunity to submit once a year. So May 2027 is our earliest opportunity to be considered, because you have to have your papers in by September the previous year. So we had missed it because we didn't find out till November. So because of the timings of this, we've reached out to see, are there any opportunities to consider in a slightly different order to try and open some give into this process. The UK have tried to help us in that regard, but we're reliant on the World Organization of Animal Health and also the EU, and unfortunately neither of those have to date have indicated that there's any ability to change the schedules that we're working towards.
Okay, back to the Glens, and this is Texter 614. In the Glens, when trees are felled or fall down, why are they just left there sometimes?
It's a whole host of reasons. So sometimes it's accessibility. We know, I mean, some glens we really have a challenge with in terms of being able to actually access and resolve those problems. And sometimes it's just the scale. You know, when we look across the island at the number of trees that fell, certainly when we had that little series of three storms in quite quick succession. The reality is we have a relatively small team of people. We have put some of that work out to the private sector, and we work very closely with a number of private sector organisations in terms of delivering tree management on a practical nature. But it is just the scale in reality and accessibility.
Okay, let's get to the lines, and I think Julian's first with us now. Hi, Julian, you're live with Claire and Tim.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Claire and Tim.
Hi, Julian.
Good morning.
Hiya. Yeah, it's a shame with the BSE thing that the opportunity wasn't taken to get us to the negligible risk in 2008, because we haven't had BSE here since 99 in this century, so perhaps we should have done it 18 years ago. Yeah. Anyway, at last Friday's Moore Vannin marine consenting meeting, the independent panel members asked representatives of Ørsted, along with your department, DEFA, and the DOI, what benefits the Moore Vannin wind farm would bring to the Isle of Man and its residents. And despite multiple questions from the panel, no answers were forthcoming from Ørsted, your department, or the DOI. How is the independent panel meant to judge the balance of harms to benefits of Moore Vannin when they're being stonewalled on all the details relating to Moore Vannin?
If I can pick up, I will just respond, sorry, just around the point you made on BSE, because I think it's an important point. One of the things we would just put on record, actually, is when you look across the whole of the United Kingdom and the Crown Dependencies, the record and the position of the Isle of Man is the strongest in terms of our last occurrence of BSE. So it does put us, we hope, in good stead, and I think it's just worth putting that on the record, Julian, so thank you for just flagging that. But I can't comment why nothing was done in 2008. I certainly wish we had perhaps put that application in, but we are where we are and we're doing what we can in this situation. Just in terms of Ørsted, from my perspective, obviously our department go with a very specific remit and elements that they can talk about, and that is for those officers to be able to talk on those topics. So I can only comment that the elements that we have been focused in around have been environment, have been impact obviously on the environment, have been health and safety, and have been fisheries as some of the key areas. And the benefit, I'm not sure, would be something that would fit within DEFA's officers to be commenting on.
Tim?
Yeah, I think the process that you're running through is you've got these batches of hearings to work those elements out, and I think the examining body do have the position that they can add extra information in or request information from government, so that process can run through, and that's kind of why we're doing it like we are. It's just that the responsibilities for DOI and DEFA will be very focused on their individual remits, as Minister said.
Julian?
Yeah, you say your remit for DEFA, but Ken Milne at DEFA admitted during Friday's session that they are negotiating with the UK over the subsidised contract with Moore Vannin. So how is this unprecedented action possible when there's been no mention of it in any sitting of Tynwald or even a vote from Tynwald members? And while I'm mentioning this, finally, the lawyer that's representing the Isle of Man at these sessions, Robert Garden, told the panel that he has no problem with Ørsted's financial capabilities, despite their appalling share price. But I noticed that his law firm, CMS Law, has a mission statement which contains the sentence, "From the climate crisis to inequality in line with the objectives of the United Nations Global Compact." So with a mission statement like that, I'm doubting if the lawyer that we're paying for will provide any meaningful pushback against Ørsted, especially considering he was involved and worked with Ørsted on the Hornsea Wind project, so no doubt would not want to damage any chances of future contracts with Ørsted. Has his conflict of interest been mentioned to the panel out of interest?
I think I would be very cautious about making allegations of this nature that I'm not in a position to push back against. And should there be any questions of this nature, I think there are very clear processes where people can raise those questions.
Yeah, and the thing is, Julian, if you have, you know, if you have firm evidence about this, then you need to bring that out into the open, because we don't have to add two and two and make 56.
No, but I'm just amazed that the Isle of Man has managed to hire CMS Law when Orsted mentioned that they are a partner lawyer along law firm, along with Pinsent Masons, who are currently representing Orsted at the sessions. So could we not have picked another law firm that wasn't actually a partner with Orsted, that is supposed to be representing the Isle of Man and our interests?
Okay, all right. Anything else, Julian, was there, or was that it?
Yeah, pretty much. The BSE thing, I think, is quite important. I'm quite curious as to why, Claire, you could have applied for this BSE change in 2022 during your first year of office. That might have given us some advantage over the UK in terms of export to EU via Ireland, I would have thought. Whereas now, the farmers are in a dire strait because some abattoirs in the UK are refusing our meat because of what is effectively our late paperwork filing.
Yeah, as I say, Julian, it certainly wasn't something that had been raised by us at officer level. The other thing I think it is worth flagging is even at the point that the UK had introduced their application and mentioned it, I think about six, seven months after they put it in via our vet, which all of this has been shared with the farming community. We've published stuff. We have nothing to hide from this perspective. We were advised that there was no intention to change the processing. Unfortunately, that then has changed. They have chosen to change the processing, and I understand the reasons why they've gone down that road. But that's the thing that specifically left us in a challenge, is because there is a variation in the processing, and a lot of that is around how they're selling into the EU markets, as you rightly point out. I think that, though, it is just worth highlighting that there are routes to market. We have seen a small dip in the number of animals exported, and that has also been seen in a slight increase in the number of animals processed locally. But they are being processed away. We are in conversation with the union, with producers, in regard to this and the impact on producers. We know that there is a mixture, actually, when we've talked to abattoirs and we've reached out from DEFA. Some of them will take the animals, but they are levying a charge, so there's a discount per kilogram on producers. Some are saying that they will just take them, but they will have to change their processes around, so they would take them on perhaps a given day rather than just at any time. And some are choosing not to take them. Now, some of those are people who didn't ever take Manx cattle. They weren't specifically looking for them. But it really is quite a mixed bag, and we have reached out to all abattoirs to try and make sure that information is in one place. But as I say, we continue to work with the union, and we've certainly reached out to producers for specific evidence where they can demonstrate they've had those losses to help us to build a case to make sure we can provide the right and appropriate support.
Okay, Julian, thank you. We're live with DEFA till one today on Man in Line.
Looking for your next staycation-inspired escape? Keep it closer than you think with Loganair. You can now save 20% on flights with promo code TARTAN20. All the escape with none of the long haul. Near really is the new far. With Loganair, your next staycation is cleared for takeoff. To save 20%, book by midnight on Tuesday, 19th May at loganair.co.uk. Terms, conditions and exclusions apply, subject to availability.
That new furniture feeling, it can become a bit of an obsession. And that's just how we like it. Fresh collections are now in at Lifestyle Furniture. Beautiful living and dining ranges, sumptuous sofas, sensational handmade beds from Harrison Spinks, Enchanted House, and more. Plus, dazzling art and decor to complete the look. Find your new obsession. Visit Lifestyle Furniture. Pop in at Snugborough Trading Estate, Union Mills. Open 7 days a week.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
Alzheimer's Society give hope and help for people living with dementia. We offer a range of support services, from a listening ear on the phone to a visit in person, and through our group's opportunities to connect with others living the same experience. We can offer you help. Call 613 181 or email isleofman@alzheimers.co.uk.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
In April's Tynwald sitting, the Health Minister moved a general debate on the mandate to Manx Care and Manx Care operating plan. With the recently announced resignation of Manx Care's Chief Executive Theresa Cope, I thought it was timely to listen to highlights from the debate. Other than the Minister and Chief Minister, just two MHKs took part in the debate. We hear their contributions in a gentle spat between two MLCs who also spoke. On agenda this evening at 6:30 p.m. on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gawn. Is health spending really under control, or is Tynwald just kicking that can of worms down the road?
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And DEFA, Tim Council is Chief Officer, and Claire Barber is the Minister, Claire Barber, MHK. And Alf's with us now. Hi, Alf, you're live with DEFA. We'll find Alf in a minute. I think Alf's on blighted line two. So in that case, I'll go to a question from Naomi, who said, will the minister commit to protecting 30% of the island's land and sea for nature in line with the global diversity framework to which the Isle of Man is a party?
So the 30 by 30 has been well talked about. And certainly, you know, we've done work regarding ASSIs and marine nature reserves across the island. And it's absolutely right. We look to protect our best land with appropriate management plans. And, you know, make sure it can be used and looked after, but also protected. But we're currently doing work around the biodiversity strategy, which is 2015 to 2025. We're doing a lot of work consulting with all of the various stakeholders with a view to bringing a set of clear proposals. So I'd just say watch this space.
Okay, and a message in that says, could you ask the minister, please, herring shoals were protected a number of years ago with the intention that through careful monitoring, we would once again enjoy large caches of herring. To date, it's difficult to get fresh Manx herring. What's happened to the herring? Where have they gone? And secondly, regarding seaweed, with the cost of fertilisers, will the government give the go-ahead to farmers to use the seaweed on the beaches? Oh, and third, sorry, why is offal unobtainable on the Isle of Man? So herring, seaweed and offal.
I mean, that's like a whistle-stop tour, really, of DEFA, I feel. It's pretty much on your standard day. But the herring, we did secure herring quota from the UK. That was a big piece of work that our fisheries officers had worked towards, and that was caught very quickly, actually, by our local fishing fleet. What we have seen is some of those herrings are slightly smaller than we would have hoped for human consumption. Some of them were used in the human market. Some of the smaller ones, they're still within the catch limits, but were used within bait. So there was a bit of a mix in that. But the actual quota we had is still relatively low. So I'd love to see a day where we see lots of Manx herring on the shelves in our supermarkets, but we're not at that point just yet. Certainly, I think that by demonstrating we could catch what there is, we will see our ability to push for more quota far stronger. But it's also important we recognise that where those shoals that we're catching are smaller than we had thought they might be, we also work carefully to make sure we don't end up in another overfishing position. So it's always about, again, that balance. And I think that really does sort of sum up the DEFA principle. Seaweed, something that I've had raised by a number of people over the years, some just as landowners, some people with allotments, some people within farming. So we recently wrote out to local authorities. That was the first piece, I suppose, of the jigsaw, just to find out what the current situation is. Some local authorities already have licences issued by DEFA that allow them to allow people to come and get seaweed. So Douglas Council, as I understand, is one of those where people can apply to the council and can come and get seaweed for their use. I imagine that's on a smaller scale than perhaps people would be talking about for big landowners. But certainly in a world where fertiliser prices are so volatile and increasing pretty rapidly, and we know that there potentially could be challenges around getting access to fertiliser, it felt like the right time to do a small piece of work within DEFA to look at the opportunities that exist for alternatives such as seaweed and perhaps other products as well. So we're going to use a STEP student. So it's someone who's essentially working through a graduate program. They can come and do a short project with us in DEFA just to look very specifically at that. And we feel that's a great sort of project that you can look at and really come out with some outcomes for that in terms of people being able to access. What has been really interesting actually is since we did that piece of work and then Jason asked us a question, I did tell him I think we'd spent more time answering his question than we'd spent on the project up to that point. But what's been interesting is hearing history where people said, oh, well, we used to be able to go and get it as farmers, and then DEFA introduced charges for it. And there's all these things that have obviously happened in the past. And I just want to draw a line under all of that and say, look, if it makes sense, we want to make sure this is possible. And that's the piece of work we're doing. And in terms of offal, I think it's quite specific to some of the areas that we're having challenges with offal in the meat plant. And we know that certainly in pet food production, raw pet food production, there's been a demand for offal, and that's increasing as people decide to move their dogs to raw pet food. And in fact, I saw recently a company in the UK doing it for cats as well. So we want to make sure we're fulfilling that, but we have to do that responsibly. And the standards required for animal food is exactly the same as required for human consumption, as you'd expect. And we're running a factory that, you know, absolutely has to meet all of those relevant standards. What there has been is some specific challenges, as I understand, in certain items of offal. And there is some work going on with the management at the meat plant to try and work out how we can get that information back to farmers to allow them to then treat the relevant animals to try and resolve this issue. But it's fair to say that work is still ongoing.
Is there still a ban on people from Europe bringing their own meat products here?
Yes, there is. So
Anne says this because she's got some German lads coming over for the TT and she wants to tell them whether or not they can bring their own sausage.
Yeah, brilliant. So thank you very much actually for flagging that, and it's a really important point. We have got signs up at the airport, but we've been talking both with the airport and the steam packet about how best we can get that messaging across. There will be announcements made now on the steam packet, certainly during TT, in a number of languages, German being one of them. So hopefully her guests, if they're coming via the boat, will hear that. Really saying to people that, you know, this is for protection of our local domestic food production sector, which is hugely important to us as an island. But also, you know, we'd hope that we can tell them about the local produce we have available here that I would argue is certainly as good, if not better, than what they might bring with them. And it's an opportunity when you go to another country to use and consume their local produce. But most importantly, we have to protect our local agriculture sector, and that's why this is so important for us. So yeah, absolutely no dairy produce, no meat are allowed to come into the island unless they have come through very specific protocols, and that would be through supermarkets in proper packaging. There's a lot of requirements. So stuff that you just bring in that hasn't been verified in the back of your camper van or in your suitcase, that's not okay. So yeah, anyone who can share that message, and if anyone wants posters, if they've got a campsite, if they've got a bed and breakfast, anything like that, we would be happy to provide them with posters. And if they wanted to drop an email to defaminister@gov.im, I'd be happy to make sure that that's provided for them.
Okay, we found Alf. Alf, sorry we lost you. You're live with DEFA. Hi, Alf.
Hello, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Claire, Tim and Andrew. My first time on Man in Line, so I've got a question not relating to farming, despite the fact I own Castle Ward Farm and we have two meat producers on the farm, two young Manx families producing cattle and sheep. My questions today are relating to building control and plant. And the questions are to Claire. How do you think building control are doing? And are they helping the industry and the wider island economy?
I mean, that's a really broad question. So building control work to a set of rules and frameworks. And if you've got feedback on anything specific, I know we've talked about lots of other topics in the past, Alf, but certainly building control, I don't think it's one we've segued into. But you know, if there is specific feedback in terms of either whether you think those rules they're working to are wrong, or whether you think they're not working to those rules, then I'd be happy to look into that. Equally, I mean, building control isn't only done within DEFA. Douglas and Onken both run their own building control sectors, so they work in partnership. They're all working to the same rules. But there are three different bodies delivering building control on the island. So without a bit more context, Alf, I think I'd struggle to answer the question.
Oh, anything particular, Alf?
Are they efficient?
Do you think that's efficient for the island to have three separate building controls?
I certainly haven't got any feedback to suggest that it's not working.
Well, surely it would be more efficient if we had one building control to cover the island. It's a very small island.
I think from a legislative point of view, they are the same. But in terms of the teams and the different ones, I know that they work all very closely together because they're incredibly difficult roles to find people that are trained in building control and with that construction experience as well. So I do know that they support each other.
You're better off with one department.
Well,
and then you would have less people, surely.
Well, I don't think we've got enough, if I'm perfectly honest, across the island. In terms of building control inspectors, there is a very, very small number of them. So it's not like the departments are wide-ranging and large. I think there's only about two in Douglas, and I think we've got three. But they do cross over. But actually, it's an area of that we don't have perhaps enough resource to cover the level of development and support. And we spent quite a lot of time updating our building regulations so that they are fit for purpose and put all those positions, but I don't think there is a massive team somewhere, and if there is, we'd love to find them.
I personally think you'd have a more efficient department if it was in one house. My experience of building control is excellent, by the way. I've got no complaints whatsoever, but I think you would be more cost effective to have it in place. We'll leave that one there and we'll go on to planning. How do you think planning are doing? And are they helping the industry and wider island economy?
I think we've made some changes around planning that personally I think have made a significant difference. So some of the elements around appeals, as an example, where we've changed the legislation, that's in conjunction. Our planning officers have been instrumental in telling us where those blockages are and how we can change them. So previously everyone had to wait for the standstill period after they'd been told they'd planning had been approved. We've now taken that to a position where if there was no one who had the right to object, who had objected, and the only person who could object is the applicant, we've now removed that standstill period so you can crack straight on. That seems to make eminent sense. And there's a number of other tidying up processes we've done. We've also looked at the major infrastructure, major projects work, and how we can support that by getting that early information in. So there's been a number of changes. There really is lots of little bits of detail, and we've also looked to resource the planning unit with more staff, because we do acknowledge that when we've got lots of applications in and also some very complex ones across the island, it's really important that they've got enough staff.
Yeah, and I'd just like to add very quickly that planning, we've put a new system in place, and now that when you go on the website you can see far more information about where applications are up to. We have moved quite a lot of things into permitted development, which means it doesn't need an application anymore. So I feel we have invested quite a lot to make that streamlined process. Don't get me wrong, I think there's still work to do, and the team are constantly trying to improve that. But I think in terms of supporting planning, number of applications that have been supported and through, and those lead times through that application process, which is now very, very visible on our planning website. You can see exactly where your application is up to, and you can see how long for. So I feel like we've opened up that process considerably. But planning is very, very difficult. There are more and more things that planners have to put into an application to understand it in terms of different statutory consultations and those positions. That is a real challenge, and that's the part that we are putting more pressure on the planning system to make decisions with more variables. And
okay.
Of course that causes
Alf.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think we need to do better to help the economy.
Okay.
This economy needs a bit of a start, and planning, in my opinion, is holding us back.
Okay, Alf, thanks for calling today. Phil dropped a note in just to say, I understand there's monitoring of vehicle emissions in places on... Is there something DEFA is responsible for, Claire Barber?
So we've just completed an air monitoring trial. So we did that over 2 years. That was a commitment we'd made in the island plan. Really just to understand, was the monitoring that we were doing sufficient? There'd been a lot of talk in Tynwald and in the wider community. And actually, we're really pleased that the figures are across the island, around our schools, on our main roads, our busiest roads, the most congested roads, actually our figures are well under the acceptable limits and far better than our neighbours. So that's all published, that's all available.
Right.
And we've
Is that
now
on the DEFA website?
Yeah, that's on the DEFA website. We can share the link with you, Andy, if you want to afterwards, so that you can pop it out via the radio station. But certainly there's it's a good news story. And off the back of that, what we've now done is we've brought back down the number of monitoring, because obviously there's a cost to doing that. So we don't think, given the results we've had, we'll continue doing monitoring, but we're going to just do that in very targeted places rather than the big process we did for that 2 years.
Okay, and that's for carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, what is
it's
it
for? Everything. It's our air quality across the board, right. Which is very, very positive, higher than the UK, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's a real positive, but yeah, we won't be doing it all of the time, but we have finished it, but it included emissions from vehicles.
Yeah, it includes particulates, nitrous. It's a really broad set of data, but I say all of that's available, and we'll send the link through.
Well, yeah, I'd be very surprised if our air quality weren't a lot better than the UK. Anyway, Patricia said, I desperately crave tripe. True, which isn't available on the Isle of Man, and faggots as well, which are supposed to be good for you. Could you say, and again, we come back to offal, tripe is lungs, isn't it? Mm. When's tripe going to be available?
So it's something I've never eaten, but you know, when my granddad was dying, that was the thing he wanted more than anything was tripe. So maybe it's something that I should try. I think it falls into that same piece of work that we're doing at the meat plant, is looking at how we can make things available. There are some things it may well be that we won't have available because the cost of retrieving them exceeds the value that we can realise for them. So I do think there is a balance.
So I think if you ask your butcher, then that would be a good way to do it, because at the moment they are focusing that support towards the pet food production,
right.
At the moment it's about carcass balancing, but actually I think if you ask for it and go through those processes at your local butcher, then they'll find a way to get it.
Tripe is very big in Spain, Claire, did you know? They dry it in the sunshine, they eat it like biltong,
like jerky. I've seen it in other places, but I say my it was the absolute one thing when my granddad was unwell, that was what he wanted, was tripe, and I was thinking, couldn't have never had it, and I've still never had it, so thanks to Patricia for reminding me. I must see if I can source some.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for that. It's 12:45. We're talking tripe today.
Hyacinth and Richard Bouquet invite you to one of their famous candlelight suppers aboard one of our trains. Onslow and Rose are coming along too, so let's see if the night runs smoothly. Don't miss Comedy Candlelight Supper, Friday the 3rd and Saturday the 4th of July, departing at 7 p.m. To book, call 697-457 or visit rail.im.
Oh, I don't believe it.
Don't believe what?
A small stone just flew off and shattered the conservatory window.
Oh, no problem. I'll call out Manx Glass and Glazing.
Can they fix it?
Yeah. Mum's glass shattered and they soon replaced it.
Manx Glass and Glazing don't just do the big jobs. Visit Snugborough Trading Estate for all your glazing supplies and repairs, including broken or failed double glazed units, along with good old-fashioned customer service and product knowledge.
Manx Glass and Glazing. You're smashing.
Mega offers on Walton. This Saturday and Bank Holiday Monday. Mega offers on in-stock TVs. In fact, offers throughout the electrical store. Come to Walton's on Isle of Man Business Park opposite Robinson's, or check out Walton's online for our latest offers. Walton's Mega offers this Bank Holiday.
The Granite Centre in Laxey. For complete kitchen renovations, replacement worktops, and with over 35 distinct styles and finishes, there's a Kuka instant boiling water tap for every home. Call 612287 or visit thelaxeykitchenco.im today.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Imagine you have just stepped into a cool swimming pool. It's a glorious hot afternoon.
Brought to you by the Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
This place reminds you that life can be slower, and here, haste is not needed.
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman, and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
12 minutes before one with Defa today. Tim Cowsell and Claire Barber, MHK, are with us. Just a couple of comments. Alan said, in the 80s, I worked on a big farm in the south of the island. We used to collect tons of seaweed from Castletown Beach, and we got fantastic crops of spuds using seaweed. So if we're putting up posters and playing messages, this is regarding, what about people with motorhomes who are coming here full of foodstuffs? And they're just comments. And Dewan's with us now. Hi, Dewan, you're live with Defa.
Yeah, load of tripe and an awful lot of talk, eh? How you doing, Claire?
I've been told off, by the way, tripe is stomach, not lungs.
You must have been listening to our jokes there, Dewan.
Yeah. How are you doing, guys? Julian took most of my notes, actually, on bits and pieces there. But, Claire, I think it must be 3-4 years ago now we spoke about seaweed on this programme, and I've brought it up quite often on here. And it takes a crisis for it to be looked at. And I think the first time I mentioned it was around the Ukraine-Russia crisis when the price of fertiliser went through the roof. And I had a lecturer in agriculture stay with me last year on the island, and she said, why would you not use it? You know, shrug of the shoulders, why would you not use it? It's used in Scotland, it's used in many other places. So, you know, this conversation I've been going on for years, why are you not? And I do think, you know, with the way things have gone with the meat plants, we spoke about this for many times on this program has been brought up, and you've brought different groups of people in to try and make it work, and I don't understand what's too difficult about this. I think there's too many bean counters in there and not enough farmers. You know, farming people should be in there. The creamery works far more efficiently. There should be some more farming output in there. I think there's a huge amount of extra regulatory hurdles for farmers to go through now, which is associated with this.
Okay, well, Claire Balbus, you've talked about the meat plant, but just if you could pre-see the problem in 2 minutes, that would be great.
Look, the board we have now has got people who are financial background, people with experience around abattoirs, we've got farmers, we've got people in haulage. You know, we really have sought to get a broad group of people who've got the skills and the expertise. And of course, the FMA are the co-shareholders on the meat plant, and they represent producers. So they're there, they're at the table. We have the meetings with them, we talk with them, and they have their own shareholder director who sits on the board at the table. And I think that's absolutely the right way. You know, in the future, is there an option to move to a model that's more similar to the creamery? You know, and maybe there is. You know, certainly from our perspective, there's nothing that's off the table in this regard. We're really keen to have these conversations around what structure looks like.
Well, what's off the table is putting the subsidy up, presumably, because you seem determined to drive it down.
Yeah, so I don't want to see the subsidy going up, because I acknowledge that when we're putting more money into the meat plant, there are other sectors of farming that aren't getting that money It's not quite the same pot, but when I'm going to Treasury for more money, if I need additional funding, it's a much harder conversation to have if I'm already going because I need more money for the meat plant every year. So what I want to be able to do is have that clear plan across a number of years. We've asked for 3 years to start off with, where I can see what the subvention will look like and we can understand. And the other thing that we've said is we don't want to close the meat plant. We recognise absolutely, as Tim said earlier, with biosecurity issues and diseases that we see, you know, not that far afield, if we're honest, you know, we could end up with a position where our borders for exports were closed, and I absolutely hope we don't find that, but God forbid we did, we need a route that our farmers can use to have their meat processed, and that's our backstop, is the abattoir. We also want it to be, though, working in the short term and the regular days, so that it's there as a backstop. And we find this with lots of things we have on the island, you know, where we know we need to have that facility available, because if we didn't, we would end up in a really tricky position. God forbid one of these things that are not a million miles away. You know, we've had foot and mouth just in the Greek islands. We're not miles away from these things, and I think we have to be realistic.
Okay. But it's also very important to be clear that the subvention hasn't impacted farming and the money or the support that we give to that sector directly. We've managed to balance that so that we do keep that level of support across the sectors.
Okay, Dewan?
Yeah, and just on another point, I know we're short of time, just on a separate point, Claire, your position on the Climate Change Transformation Board, is that a conflict of interest when it's going to come to the planning for the Eyre Stain wind turbine development?
No, but I would be conflicted because it's on DEFA land.
Okay. All right. Duant, thanks for calling today. More messages in. Andy, tripe is stomach lining. Thank you. Lung is only really used in haggis, and we're not producing haggis on the Isle of Man. With Tim Cowsell and Claire Barber today, and lots more messages about whatever happened to the energy efficiency grant and the green living grant, and what's the next stage in this? You have 2 minutes, Claire Barber.
a really important question. Energy efficiency, we've actually just put some more money into that to allow that to continue.
£100,000?
£100,000. That's acknowledging, obviously, the cost of living pressures that people are experiencing, but also that we haven't yet brought that new scheme. Green Living Grant scheme has been closed to new entrants. That's been for quite a long time now, but people who were already in the system are being able to just continue their process to its natural conclusion to pursue anything that was identified for them. We're currently in the process of just pulling together what will be the Heatwise Home scheme. It's very, very advanced. I know we've talked about this. We've sadly had to move the timeline forward because it has been trickier than we had envisaged, partly because it's not just a grant scheme. We're looking at having loans, and I've talked on this programme before about that. So the work is there. We've got to go. We've got to finalise the processes through Treasury, and Tim Ward ultimately it will need to come to, and we're aiming for July for that. Absolutely keen that this needs to happen. All the work is there in the background. It's been a really big piece of work for a relatively small team, and it certainly has been more complicated than we'd hoped, but it is on its way.
But I mean, that scheme was very popular, wasn't it?
Energy efficiency, absolutely. And Green Living Grant, once they ironed out a few...
Was it too popular?
No, I don't think so. I think it's made, you know, genuine differences to people's properties. And I did a bit of calculation the other day and had worked out that the amount of loft insulation given out in the energy efficiency scheme would get you from the sound to the point of air and back again with a little bit extra. You might get back to St John's. You know, it's a really significant amount going into our houses around our islands, helping people reduce their bills, but also making sure that we're not emitting heat just into our environment. So it's a win-win on every level. And again, it just shows the importance of balance and how you can help the environment and help people's pockets all at the same time.
Okay, when those loans happen then, who'll be the lender?
So that's the piece of work we're just working through at the moment, but ultimately it would be done with an underwrite through the climate change funding, and that's why we want to make sure climate change funding, you know, people talk about £42 million of climate change funding just being thrown out into who knows what, and in reality the vast majority of that money to date has gone directly into people's pockets to pay for improvements to their properties, and that's absolutely something that we're looking to continue with this scheme.
Okay, and again, this is a big question with a short period of time. The future of fishing in the Isle of Man, is it a good future, is it a positive future, or are we looking at a declining industry?
So obviously there's different elements of fishing, whether it be recreational fishing or whether it be commercial fisheries. You know, I think when we look at our scallops, we've got a really, really positive sector. We've got the scallop management boards who are coming together with science, with people within fisheries, with people within DEFA, all working together to make sure that the right decisions are taken.
Waking up with the island every morning, Manx Radio.
Sorry about that. I meant to do this. Anyway, sorry, continue, carry on.
threw me a bit. Yeah, no, really looking to make sure it's sustainable for the future, but also pushing for additional quota for our Manx fishing fleets here on the island. And one of the really good news stories that maybe we'll talk about another day is the Nephrops, and just seeing how by having closed areas and moving to a pot-based fishing industry for Nephrops in certain areas, the Nephrops have almost quadrupled in size.
What's Nephrops?
So langoustines.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and increased in size, and then the value per kilogram has also increased significantly. Okay. You know, so again, seeing environment benefit by not dredging, seeing the economic benefit increase, and seeing food security for our island benefited at the same time.
Okay. Thanks for being with us today, Claire Barber, MHK, and Tim Cowsell from DEFA today. Open line tomorrow and Wednesday, and we're live at Ramsey Grammar School on Thursday. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Chris on the phones.